Governor Scott Walker is going to be joining us now to discuss the issues in his new book, Unintimidated, A Governor's Story and a Nation's Challenge. If you have a question for Governor Walker, or if you want to challenge or support his account of the Act 10 legislation, the Capitol protest that ensued, or what kind of leadership the nation needs to move forward, call us now. But please have a concise point or question for the governor so we can cover as much territory and hear from as many of you and him as possible. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Governor Scott Walker was elected in 2010. He survived a recall election in June of 2012. After protest erupted over his proposal to remove most collective bargaining rights from public workers in February of 2011. He is the author of Unintimidated, A Governor's Story and a Nation's Challenge. Thank you for joining us, Governor Walker, and happy Thanksgiving to you.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, too, as well. Thanks for having me on.
And briefly, before we get into the issues in or raised by your book, what does Wisconsin have to be thankful for this year?
Oh, I think compared to years past, it's relatively peaceful. We've got all but a handful of our members of the National Guard back in state and not deployed across the globe. And I think overall, we've seen signs of greater prosperity. The unemployment rate last week was down to 6.5%. So hopefully, that means even better things in the future for families who are either looking for work or looking for better jobs in the future. So all those things, plus the obvious things. The family and friends amongst us that we're thankful for every year.
Well, let's get to the book. Why did you write it?
Well, I thought, you know, so many people around the state and even others I'd bumped into around the country said that they knew about the images of the protest, they knew about the results of the recall, but they really didn't know the details of the how and the what, and probably most importantly, the why. I think not so much for people around the country, but even for people here in Wisconsin, understanding a little bit more of the why we did what we did, why it was necessary, and why ultimately I believe and others believe that it's working is important, not just for those who were supportive of me during the recalls or even during the initial debate over the reforms, but why I think a lot of undecided or even voters who maybe leaned against me would be interested in at least understanding why we did what we did. And so that's in the book.
Well, we did just hear from a couple of participants in the Solidarity sing-along who, among other things, portrayed their sing-along and the protests as joyful and peaceful and not violent or aggressive or in any way that they heard you describe them in the book. What's your response to that?
Well, in our case, the stories of the book, and I, in the many interviews I've done in the last week, point out that there was two very different views out there, that for the vast majority of people, whether they were initially from in the state or those who came from other states to be here in and around our capital, people were pretty peaceful. But there were a select group, I don't know exactly what the right number would be, but a significant enough group, not just to me, to my family, to my administration, to members of the legislature who were anything but peaceful. And that's part of the behind the scenes, that people saw one element, they didn't see the other part. And so I have no doubt that the people who were on probably were part of that larger peaceful group. But there were plenty of examples of things that were everything from death threats to abuses to shutting down events to all sorts of other things. To me, having a peaceful presence is one thing, but this book is filled with stories of whether it was the Welcome Center in Beloit, where nobody could actually even talk at the ceremony, to the 100th anniversary at Devil's Lake, to the celebration at Gateway Technical College, to the interruption of the Special Olympics ceremony on the square of the Capitol. There's example after example after example of where there were, again, it might be a minority of the protesters, but people who decided that they didn't want other voices to be heard. They only wanted their voice to be heard.
Yeah, Tom on Facebook says, unfortunately, a lot of politicians receive death threats. That's true, isn't it?
Yeah, but in my life, I've gotten a handful. I haven't gotten hundreds. And I haven't got them as graphically as explaining where my wife worked, where my kids were at, what school they went into, what time they went in and out of doors. That's a pretty big difference between usually the threats that we've gotten in the past from folks that, when checked out, were folks who weren't politically motivated as much as they were people who just had other issues that were problematic and they needed some help and assistance. And these threats overwhelmingly were not in that vein. They were from people who really were specifically directed towards this legislation.
Yeah. Others say that that you have a good security force, and that you also had Republican-controlled legislature. What was there to be intimidated about?
Well, there wasn't. In the end, I didn't stop my public appearances. I still ran around in the state. But it is interesting how dismissive even those comments are that you're reading, because remember, about a month before this happened, we had a congresswoman in Arizona who, after that happened, I was one of the many voices on either end of the political spectrum who spoke out against that, mentioned that we needed to cool the political rhetoric and not personalize the differences that many felt somehow it led to that tragic incident down in Arizona. And I think there was pretty much a universal sense, at least amongst most of us, that we did need to tone things down. We did need to focus. It was fine to have a debate and a discussion, but that some of the things that many point out to that led, or at least they thought led to that shooting, were the sort of things that we didn't want to see revved up in American political discussion. And yet a month later, that's exactly what we saw on display in and around our state capitol. I mean, I've got the pictures, the images of the my face up on banners with a scope on it, just like the very things that people spoke out about in the Arizona shooting. Excuse me. We had plenty of other examples, not just directed at me, but directed at others. And again, I can handle that. I can take that. But it just was a little bit ironic to me that people on one end of the spectrum had spoke out against that, but they were eerily silent when the same sorts of things were happening in the debate in Madison.
Yeah. I don't think anyone doubts that you got more threats, but we just heard our Solidarity sing-along participants say that they also received death threats. It's, and in part, they blame you for the polarization. What's your response to that?
Well, the interesting thing, I remember in the book I tell a story, again, I don't know anything about the singers there, but I do know with other groups of public employees, I remember even throughout the midst of this, I would still keep a regular schedule and go to, as part of our reading initiative, we would go to elementary schools around the state, read typically the third graders, and then I didn't do it in front of the media. I did it just to get some feedback. We'd go meet with teachers in the various public schools I was at. And remember one in central Wisconsin I was at, where I was in the student library meeting with teachers after our visit. And I think the second or third question was, you know, why are you attacking teachers? Why do you hate teachers? And I said, you know, that's a fair question. But I said in response, I said, go to YouTube tonight. Almost everything I say or do, particularly at that time, somebody was videotaping, posting up on YouTube. I said, you'd be surprised, but if you go and look at that, you'll not find one clip of me saying anything about a teacher, for that matter, public employees as a whole, that wasn't positive, that didn't say we were thankful for the work that they did. And I said, now, the folks who were listening to me there had every right to maybe disagree with the position I was taking on the budget repair bill, but in terms of what we were saying and what we were doing, there was the people who were making them feel like they were under attack, ironically, were the leaders of their own union who wanted to motivate people to come to the Capitol, who wanted to get out and stir things up. It wasn't the rhetoric that was coming out of us. In fact, ironically, one of the things I point out in the book is early on, I didn't tell stories of the abuses in the collective bargaining system, whether it was overtime or other issues like that, because I didn't want this to be viewed as something where we were speaking out about public employees. Ironically, that obviously didn't work. It didn't work the way we had planned, but our thought was this would pass, the reforms would go into place, people would be able to judge them based on the results, not based on what people said they may or may not be. And in the end, because it took so much time, because of the 14 senators that left and how the process dragged on, we then had to change focal points and start telling about some of those stories. And I think if we'd done that early on, people probably would have said, hey, Governor, you need to fix these things.
We are talking with Governor Scott Walker, author of Unintimidated, A Governor's Story and a Nation's Challenge. We'll get to your calls for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk at WPR.org in just a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Governor Scott Walker, and our first caller for him is Brad in Plover. Hello, Brad.
Hi there. Governor Walker, you read a top 10 list to your staff stating that public workers get paid twice as much as a private sector person doing the same job but doing half as much work. And according to a Rutgers University independent study on Wisconsin workers, they said that the public workers in the state are compensated 10% less than their equal counterparts in the private sector, 5% less if you factor in benefits. So how does that square with the top 10 list item that you read to your staff 2 years ago?
Before we get to the pay of public sector employees, that top 10 list has received some criticism in that it did show that you were insulting public workers as being lazy and other things. Top 10 reasons why you might be a member of a public sector union. You take a week off to protest in Wisconsin and your office runs better and some other things like that. Why did you read that to staff, Governor Walker?
I read it actually, was reading it on an email I got as I was walking through the tunnel past piles of SWAT gear in a very heightened moment where one or two people were with me and kind of lighten the moment, kind of like passing on a joke that I'd heard from the Jay Leno show or any of those other shows before. This is not, unlike what the caller just mentioned, this was not something I put out in the press release. I didn't say at a podium in a statement. I merely pointed out that at that particular moment when the people around me were pretty stressed out about the circumstances and the risk that I and others were at that point, we lighten the moment by passing on something that someone else wrote. Doesn't mean that when you comment about something that David Letterman or Jay Leno or others say that you're stating that somehow that is a statement of fact. It is merely trying to lighten a particular moment.
And we have a number of Facebook comments who say Governor Walker should apologize for this insult. Do you apologize for that?
Well, I didn't create the list. Again, that's one of those where there's plenty of times where I think there's people all across the state and all across America who pass on comments that they've seen on TV or heard on shows or other things like that, but that's in no way viewed as a statement of fact. It was merely pointing out something that lightened a particular moment.
And very briefly, because we do have other callers, Brad says public employees aren't paid a lot more than the public sector or the private sector, and that's just incorrect.
Well, in this case, again, this is one of those where people like to redirect the argument. My argument was never about whether public employees make, and there's plenty of studies that can go either way on that, but our argument in this was never about whether public employees make too much or too little. It was simply about the choices we were given at the time with a $3.6 billion budget deficit. As I point out in the book, we could have done what other states did, like our neighbors in Illinois, had dramatic increases in taxes. Illinois did a 67% increase in individual income taxes. I think it was 46% on businesses. And a year later, they had an even bigger budget problem. We could have done what other states did and did massive layoffs. In our case, if we hadn't done the things we were intending to do, we literally would have had tens of thousands of layoffs at the state and the local level. But we didn't think that made a whole lot of sense at that time, both because of the services that wouldn't be delivered and because it would have a negative impact on the economy and on individual families. We didn't cut Medicaid like other states did. In fact, we added $1.3 billion more to Medicaid to care for needy families, children, and seniors. In our state, with a budget where more than half of the money goes to local governments, as a local official for 8 years, I knew, because Jim Doyle and the legislature before had cut aid to me, to counties, to cities, to schools, but without giving us any tools, that in turn meant that we often had to lay off public employees at the local level as well. I knew if we did that in our budget, it would be devastating unless we gave them the tools to offset that. And so in the end, do public employees, including me and my family, pay a little bit more for pensions and health care? Absolutely. but still far less than what our counterparts pay outside of government. Most people in this state pay 20 to 25%, for example, their health insurance. Most of our public employees are still paying about 12 to 13%.
What's going on with Minnesota, Governor? Minnesota didn't go through the turmoil that Wisconsin did. And there's been some articles and comparisons recently saying that it's doing better economically than Wisconsin is.
Well, those are convenient comparisons. At the height of the recession, Minnesota had an unemployment rate about 8%, compared to Wisconsin and Illinois that both had unemployment rates above 9%. And throughout that time, up until this year, Minnesota had an evenly divided government, initially a Republican governor and the Democrat legislative majorities. The last 2 years, it was the other way around, the Democrat governor and the Republican majorities. It wasn't until this year and just a few months ago that you have a Democrat governor, Democrat majorities, and they just passed a budget with about a $2 billion tax increase. So we'll see next year if that pans out being better or worse. But the night and day difference is between Illinois and Wisconsin, where both states, like I said, had unemployment rates back in 2009 of just over 9%. Today, Illinois still hovers at 9%, whereas Wisconsin has a 6.5% unemployment rate, a balanced budget, a pension that's fully funded, a bond ring that's positive, versus Illinois that still has that high unemployment rate, that has that ultimately has a pension system that's the worst funded in the country, and a bond rating that is equally as bad. So that, to me, is the best comparison of the two, because we were at the same spot. Minnesota has a lower unemployment rate today because they had a lower unemployment rate 4 years ago.
So, Governor, are you for sure running for re-election? We talked to a Republican campaign strategist, Bill Krause, recently, who thought maybe you might not, because he thought that maybe you didn't want to go through that fight to be re-elected.
Well, that's an interesting conclusion, never having talked to me or anybody around me. But from our standpoint, we'll announce next spring. I'm focused right now on being governor. The legislature has still got more time to work. And so while they're working and while we're attempting to keep them focused on economic and fiscal issues with the things like the $100 million property tax relief we provided and the worker training bills we're trying to see through and a few other measures we'd like to see through in the spring, I'm going to stay focused on that. But I would obviously be very surprised if something were to happen that would make me think not to run for re-election. But I'll be announcing that decision next spring and really feel that we've been able to do some really positive reforms to turn the budget around, to get the economy going again. But there's much more work to be done. Our focus is still on helping the people of the state create 250,000 jobs by 2015. We've got a ways to go for that, but we're not backing down. We're committed to that. At the same time, I made that pledge years ago. I also talked about helping the people of the state create 10,000 or more net new businesses. We've surpassed that goal. More important than just meeting a campaign promise, why that's important is I firmly believe that the larger jobs goal will be met precisely because of new businesses, startup businesses, and expanding small businesses. And so the fact that even before 2015, here in 2013, we're already at a point where we've exceeded that 10,000 net new businesses, that's a good sign for the future, because it means that many more people are optimistic about starting their own companies. And companies that even start out with two employees, we believe over time, two become four become eight become 16, and suddenly we start to see dramatic compounded growth in our jobs in the state.
Laurel on Facebook says, I am so grateful that Governor Walker was able to maintain his stance in order to follow through on making difficult choices on behalf of the people of Wisconsin. So a supportive comment here, but goes on to say, I am wondering how realistic it is, though, that he will make a play for the presidency. Rumor has it the book release is just a stepping stone to that path. Governor, is this are you testing the presidential waters with this book?
No, and in fact, actually, a lot of people nationally have been surprised. Oftentimes, books that are done by political candidates are all about their biography. They're all nothing but positives about who they are, where they were, and what they've done. People will be surprised about this book because it's really a narrative of what happened what the people of this state have done over the last couple of years, not just what I've done. It talks about lawmakers. It talks about stories of individuals. It talks about things that we've learned in the state, and it talks about some of the mistakes we made, and even things as direct as when early on my own wife, Tonette, said, "Why are you doing this?" And talks about how I learned from that I was so focused on fixing things, I didn't spend enough time talking with people and explaining why we needed to do what we were doing. And it was moments like that really turned things around for me and got me focused on that. Those are all things that I think if you look at other political books out there, you don't typically read those things. In our case, we wanted to share the story of the how, the what, and ultimately the why. And next year, assuming I run for governor, it'll be my third time in 4 years. I'm really focused on being governor, and any decision I'd ever make in the future would be based not just on myself and my family, but really on the impact it would have on the people of Wisconsin. We've gone through a lot over the last few years. It's been tough. I think whether you're Republican or Democrat or somewhere in between, all the recalls and the protests and everything else, there's a part of me that just, I think for the sake of the state, would love to have just the full 4-year term to go out and really see through these reforms.
Mary in Brookfield is with us. Hello, Mary.
Good morning. Good morning, Governor. How are you?
Good morning, Mary. Thanks for calling.
Good. Hi. You say in your book that the phrase, "This is what democracy looks like," is a great phrase, but that you didn't want to use it because you wanted to, quote, end the acrimony and unite our state once again. I think that's right?
Correct.
How does that even remotely gel with your conversation with Diane Hendricks, where you say your goal as governor is to divide and conquer?
Yeah, and the statement I made that you initially quoted was the night of the recall election. The conversation I had was early on in our tenure when I was down at Rock County 5.0 talking about how to help the folks in Beloit and Janesville and others who'd been devastated by the recession the last few years. And it was specifically about taking on the powerful special interests that I thought were taking the authority away from the taxpayers and putting it in the hands of a few. And I wanted to shift from the way the status quo had been at both the state and the local level and put that power firmly in the hands of the taxpayers. And I think over time, that's why a majority of people in the state ultimately voted for me, because they saw what we were doing was choosing between whether or not the big government special interests were in charge or the hardworking taxpayers. But once we won that election, and I believe that's the reason why we won, was because that's the choice people made and they chose the taxpayers. To me, it wasn't about, I didn't want to spike the ball. I didn't want to rub it in. I said, okay, it's now time to move on. And it's why the following week I had all the members of the legislature, their spouses and their staff over for a cookout at the residence to try and talk about what do we do next. And as I mentioned in the book, Peter Barca, the state assembly Democrat leader, talked about how that was a next good step. And along the way, obviously, there are going to be areas now and in the future where different parties will disagree, and that's fine. That's all part of the country and the state that we live in. But I think the tone has changed dramatically.
Yeah, the person you're talking to wanted Wisconsin to be a right to work state. And is that something that's on your agenda?
No, it's not. I mean, I've talked about it favorably in the past, but the reason why I haven't pursued that, it wouldn't be pursuing in the future, is I said we've taken on the biggest part of that challenge with the public employee unions, with the challenge I just alluded to, one where in the past, instead of the taxpayers and the people they duly elected being the ones that ultimately had the say as to what was going to happen in our schools and our cities and our towns and our counties and our state government, more often than not was a handful of people who were involved with the contract. But from the state as a whole, I mean, there are a number of unions that support me because they see that we've created an environment where more of their members are back to work, where the economy is improving, and in the private sector, by and large, private sector unions are our partners in economic development. And I think many people are surprised to learn this, but almost 40% of the self-identified union households actually voted for me in the recall election, and I got to assume a fair number of them were people who worked in the private sector who saw that the economy did indeed improve once we put our policies in place.
Before we let you go, Governor, a number of listeners are interested in why you left Marquette University and the discrepancies that they see in the various printed accounts about this. Why did you leave?
Well, there aren't any discrepancies from my standpoint. I started working for IBM midway through my time at Marquette, but still continued as a student in my senior year. One of my clients was the American Red Cross right down the way in Milwaukee. They offered me a job, and even though you go to college for more than just a job, you go for an education. Obviously, one of the driving forces when you're young is getting a job. I got a job there in 1990, working in marketing and financial development, and thought I'd go back over time, but a few years later, Toinette and I got married. The year after that, we had Matt. The year after that, we had Alex, just along the way, like a lot of folks in this state, your time and your money is spent on your kids, and that's why I've been very open about that. In fact, in the budget address, I mentioned the new University of Wisconsin Flex option is something that would help non-traditional adult learners with college credit go back and get degrees in healthcare and engineering and other areas, and told my own story as an example, one that in the future, as the degree options open up and go beyond just those targeted areas, I may very well be one of the people that invokes that program as well.
All right. Well, we have just 30 seconds to go. Maybe do you hope, do you think the state is going to, do you think the state is healed?
Oh, I think by and large things have calmed down. I think there are some people who, doesn't matter what I say or do in the future, are always going to be upset and want to protest and do other things along the way. But I think in the end, for the vast majority of people, things have calmed down. I think you see it around the state, and people have moved on. They're ready to move on to the next big thing, and I'm ready to go along with them and help us move the state forward.
Thank you so much for joining us, Governor Scott Walker, author of Unintimidated. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Bill Martins for producing the program. This is the Ideas Network.